This is The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. It is the day after the New Hampshire. It's the day after the Iowa caucus. God, I am totally confused here. It is the day after the Iowa caucus. We still have no results in that caucus. And it is scary on a lot of levels. It is just really scary about what happened last night. But what is, to my extent, equally frightening is the whole question of what's happening in China with the coronavirus. And as many of you know, as I just mentioned before, my daughter lives in Shanghai. I'm hearing from her every day and getting the updates from what she knows, which is actually limited knowledge, as she gets locked into her compound in Shanghai. So I saw a series of articles that were written at Kaiser Health News, and I thought, you know what? This is where you need to go. These are the people that you trust. We have joining us right now Anna Maria Barry Jester. She is a senior correspondent with Kaiser Health News. She focuses on public health and health disparities. We have Anna Elmendraria. You'll have to make sure I'm sure I did it wrong. I apologize. She covers the business of healthcare and healthcare policy. She was born in Manila, Philippines, and grew up in Wellington, New Zealand. And before moving to California, she worked at HuffPost for 9 years. Let me welcome Anna M and Anna A. All right, Anna Marie, thank you so much for joining us. And Anna, pronounce your last name so I don't butcher it anymore on the air.
It was very, very close. Thank you so much. It's Anna Almendrala, and thank you so much for having us.
Well, it is a pleasure. So I posted the two articles that both of you had written. But before I did that, you also had a post at Kaiser Health News, which I thought was actually very useful. And it was, will coronavirus snowball into a pandemic? Some optimistic that it could be avoided. Others aren't so sure. And I felt like as they were giving us these little chunks of news, Anna Maria, I felt like I was like, oh, my God, once again, I need a Ouija board. What are they predicting? What are they telling me? And really, at this point, at least tell me, what do we know? And have we moved to a place where you really could call it a pandemic, given my understanding of a definition of pandemic? Not yet.
That's correct. Yeah, there's so much going on here, and it's all moving very quickly. There's a couple things that are really important. One is that we know so much more at this stage in this outbreak than we have in previous outbreaks. So in a sense, we're getting a ton of information very quickly. On the other hand, there's still a lot more questions than answers. So there's still a ton we don't know about, you know, sort of how infectious this virus is, how deadly it is, how many people are actually infected. But that said, there's more than 20,000 confirmed cases right now. The vast majority of them are in China. There's been 427 deaths. All but two of those are in mainland China. It is not yet a pandemic, but there is concern that that could happen. And there's a lot of questions about whether or not it can be contained, as happened with SARS, and eventually the virus more or less died off, or whether or not it's going to become, you know, a virus that sort of regularly rotates and pops up, you know, every flu season or throughout the year, as is the case with four other coronaviruses that we currently have and make up what's believed to be something like, you know, a quarter of colds in the United States.
So let me just make sure that I have the definition right. I'm correct here that a pandemic is a disease with significant outbreaks in multiple regions or continents. And the reason why this is not defined as a pandemic is that basically it is the focus of China right now, and that the deaths and the spread really is happening within the confines of China. Is that correct, Anna?
That's right. And the important thing here is that all, you know, the rest of the world is on high alert and is trying to make sure that they contain the virus and keep it from spreading elsewhere. But the vast majority of cases and the most of the spread right now really is in mainland China.
So I talked to my daughter this morning, Anna, and one of the things that she said to me was, I mean, obviously there's a lot of information swirling around. There's the country's in basic sort of kind of a quasi shutdown. Factories, no one's showing up for work at factories. People are being, you know, examined before they come back to Shanghai because they've been on vacation because of the Chinese New Year. So she said it happened at such a crazy time because everybody is everywhere and everybody wants to come home. You know, it's like because they've all been traveling. So I guess I need to know a little bit about the fact that we know more, Anna Marie, you said, that we've known in the past. Is that because China is so terrified that they're willing to be more open and transparent than they normally are, number one? And number two, if we know more, who's dying from this? Is this really an old person and child, like, you know, young babies that are dying? Or is this really something where the mortality is across the board when you're looking at sort of the age range?
So we don't really know yet what the mortality looks like, partly because you have to wait till people have sort of, the virus has run its course. So, you know, some people who have it right now will get sicker. Some people will get better. And until the outbreak is over, you kind of don't have that information, which is a challenge in these situations. That said, from the report so far, it is predominantly affecting older people, and specifically men seem to be more prone to the virus than women.
Wow.
So, yes, it is. It does seem that the serious cases are concentrated among people who have already compromised immune systems in some way, and or are elderly, and again, are men. The question about information and it moving faster, I mean, part of that is just that the world has changed and we are ever more connected.
Right.
There is, you know, I can't really speak to what's happening in China and information, and there are all kinds of reports coming out about, you know, the Chinese government being very open about things, other reports saying that they have been hiding some information. I can't speak to that, but I do think that it's important. The WHO has been commending China for being much more open than they had in the past in previous outbreaks.
Okay, Anna A. So let me ask another question. So I remember landing in Shanghai in 2013. And when I got to Shanghai, what was so amazing to me was that they wouldn't let the plane land in 2013 because it was the worst pollution they'd ever had. And there was an inversion in Shanghai. So we actually were diverted to Beijing, which is usually more polluted than Shanghai. And then I finally got back to Shanghai. Here's what I noticed. Everybody, let me tell you about it. Everybody's wearing masks. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like I would wear a hat, they would wear a mask. My daughter, when I went to her apartment in Shanghai, she had different kinds of masks depending on the level of pollution. So I am seeing all of China putting on a mask. I believe you wrote a piece about the fact that there's a significant Chinese population in places like California. And as soon as they heard about the coronavirus, they did what is, you know, culturally normal for them. They put on masks. Well, I know about how I look at masks in the United States, and I'm like, wow, what's wrong with you? Where in China, what's wrong with you is if you don't have a mask on. So talk to me a little bit about the mask conversation, because the Vatican just sent masks to China. My daughter's looking at her masks. You know, people are putting them on. What is it about China and masks that I need to understand from a cultural perspective, but the masks actually do anything other than to say, I'm afraid?
You're absolutely right, Arnie. In many different Asian countries, face masks are a normal sight. They're part of a daily personal hygiene routine that isn't necessarily just about illness.
Yeah.
As you said, it's also about air pollution, smog, let's say like volcano ash in the Philippines. And it's such an entrenched part of the culture that there are some masks that are, you know, for fashion. There are masks that people wear to match the rest of their outfit, in addition to the paper surgical masks that we're seeing out and about now.
Right.
For people who wear masks in public before the coronavirus outbreak, you know, there was there's sort of a dual meaning, right? It could either be saying, I don't want to be sick, like I'm traveling right now. I know that I'm going to be boxed in with a lot of different people. I don't want to get an illness. Or it could say, I have a little cough. I am sneezing. I want to protect other people around me. So in that sense, we don't actually know what a face mask means if you're just looking at someone without talking to them.
There was a quote in, I believe it was in your piece, Anna A., and the quote was this: fear at this moment is the greatest epidemic that we have. And the reason I even mention this is that in the United States, you're not allowed in some places to cover your face. That you can't go to school and cover your face. You know, the whole idea of transparency, you know, the clear backpacks. You can't cover your face. So how is the community in California and in the Chinese community, how are we weaving both their cultural natural tendency to do this, the idea that people are now embracing masks as if it's a solution? And I think you put it out in your piece, actually the best thing to do is not to put on a mask, but wash your damn hands.
That's right. The CDC right now is telling people to just practice standard hygiene, washing hands frequently for a long time with lots of soap, covering your cough and your sneeze with your elbow or with a tissue. But I think a really interesting place that this cultural disconnect is playing out is in the school districts. So right now in Southern California, there are many different school districts that have high concentrations of Asian and Chinese American students. And each school district is being left to their own devices to decide whether or not they're going to have a policy on masks. In one of my stories, the Alhambra School District, which has a lot of Chinese Americans, they're sort of taking a hard line against it. They're saying, this is fear-mongering. We should leave the mask supply for the hospitals. Please do not come to school with a mask. But in other school districts with a high population of Chinese students, they're saying, you know, you know, we agree with the CDC and the Department of Health that masks don't really help. But if it makes you feel better, if it's something that you want to do for your cultural practice, go ahead, come to school with the mask on.
All right. So, Anna Marie, I want to talk to you about your piece at Kaiser Health News. Public health officials offer scant details on U.S. coronavirus patients. So not only do I want to know about the handful of patients that have it, Boston has it. I know there's a number of locations around the country. I think even New Hampshire may have a coronavirus individual who's been identified. He came from Wuhan province. So there's a couple of things. How prepared is the United States? Numero uno. Tell me about my public health approach to anything in the United States. My understanding is that we've been draining the public health system for decades, and that Donald Trump actually dismantled the organization within his administration that would be looking at these sort of potential global pandemics. I'm kind of curious as how prepared are we, and how quickly can we go from unprepared or draining resources to turning on the switch and knowing what to do and having a network of people around the country that we can trust that will inform us.
Yeah, in many ways, we are very prepared. We have hospitals that are well-equipped, and we have a whole system of communication between the CDC and healthcare providers. We have incredible labs. You know, we have a ton of resources that are available to us when an outbreak like this hits. We do have some vulnerabilities, though. So speaking of face masks, for example, 95% of the surgical masks used in the United States are manufactured in China. And if they have an increased use there or the supply chain is disrupted, this great reporter, Marin McKenna, has been writing about how, you know, we actually are already at having some places are saying they're having trouble acquiring a sufficient supply of masks, some healthcare providers. So there are vulnerabilities. That said, we really do have very high quality care, and we are quite prepared for this kind of outbreak. And they have been preparing for a long time. But as you said, it's true that the public health system has lost a lot of funding over the years in certain ways. And you know, so it's something you have to be vigilant about. That's always the trick here, is that it's easy to care when we're in the midst of an outbreak. It's a lot harder to pull in the funds when you haven't had one for a while.
Exactly. But as I'm thinking about this, you mentioned the fact that we're also running out of face masks because China is one of the biggest producers of face masks on the planet. But the other thing that we also know about China is that China actually is connected to our drug materials. And that I believe I saw a statistic like 80% of some of the content in the drugs that we use here in part comes from China. And as I mentioned to you before, we're seeing the shutdown of everything. That includes factories that make drugs. It talks about the transportation system that would move product to market. All those things are grinding to a halt. And it turns out you don't need a tariff war to talk about China. We know that whether you are going into Walmart and looking at everything made in China, but now I can deal with, you know, I'm not getting a plastic cup. What I can't deal with, however, is if I don't have access to the drug I need or some of the ingredients in that drug. What does that say about also our security system, Anna A., about what we need to diversify? I mean, it's good that China does it cheap. It's good that Big Pharma, you know, exported all their jobs to China. But now we're looking at a place where our level of vulnerability is now heightened because guess what? That very important place, that huge part of the planet, now is so compromised because it is with an epidemic, not a pandemic, but an epidemic, and that will impact all of us, including from a health perspective.
That's right. It's not just the pharmaceuticals. It's like the primary materials that make them are often, the vast majority, come from China. So there's medical devices. There's a wide range of products that we, you know, are sort of necessary to our healthcare system that come from China. And there has been a lot of concern from people who write about health security, biosecurity, these kinds of things, that this sort of singular supply chain is going to pose a problem. And that could be for political reasons, but it also, as we're seeing right now, could be because there's an overburdened system in another country that interrupts our supply chains. And that is causing a lot. That is of great concern to a lot of people.
And it should be a great concern. The other thing that I guess I want to talk about is that, you know, how do we develop the level of trust we're going to need dealing with this? Right now, it is not an issue in the United States, but the issue of trust is huge in this country right now. I mean, I was kidding the other day that we should take the Sharpies away from President Trump because, God forbid, he uses a Sharpie when we're talking about the coronavirus. But what I'm trying to figure out is that how do we approach this in a rational way? Do we have to learn about symptoms? Do we need to? I mean, you don't want to shun certain people because we know it's in Asia, and then once again, what does that do to stigmatize Asians? You know, I am concerned about our behavioral response, even if the pandemic doesn't get here, because to some extent, I feel like it sort of massages the lack of trust and the divide between us. So I guess I'm gonna talk to you, Anna Marie. What is it that people are recommending, the kind of guidance as we approach this and want to do it in a way that's both methodical and rational?
Yeah, the most important thing is that we are not at great risk in the United States right now. There's all sorts of screening measures happening for people who are arriving from places with, you know, large outbreaks, mainland China specifically. There's a very intact healthcare system that's prepared to test and treat people and monitor them. And so at this point, we are not at great risk in the United States. That said, the second most important thing is that the country at large continues to be prepared for outbreaks like this. And so they are acting, you know, with vigilance. But the important thing in the U.S. is to wash your hands because it's flu season and the flu is quite deadly.
Exactly.
And has been spreading wildly.
So Anna A., as I was asking that question, I was actually thinking of your article. And again, your article, Masks Reveal Cultural Disconnect as LA's Chinese Community Braces for Coronavirus. And just as this is happening, we saw the reinstatement of a very vigorous public charge rule when it comes to legal immigrants. Let me repeat this, not undocumented, but legal immigrants. And it is now making a lot of legal immigrants very fearful about accessing this remarkable healthcare system that Anna Marie, you were just describing before. You know, we have doctors connected, but now a lot of people who are in the immigrant community, and I'm thinking of the Chinatowns of this world, okay? So not only are they putting on the masks, which kind of explain their fear as well as their cultural identity, but now they've been discouraged from accessing things like Medicaid, accessing the kind of public services they may need if they think they are sick. So have you started connecting this public charge rule with what it could mean if we have to address this in a more effective manner?
You know what, Arnie? That's a really great idea for an investigation that Kaiser Health News should do.
You have
to. I did visit the Chinatown Service Center, which primarily serves Chinese American immigrants or Chinese immigrants, and they're primarily a Medi-Cal population. From what I can tell from talking to the doctors and the CEO, people are still coming in. People are not afraid to access their services because they also have tax preparation, they have dentists, they have behavioral health centers. That said, I think that this is such a fast-moving situation that it would be good to track these trends over time. And as to your point about the sort of racial suspicion about Asian people, Chinese people wearing face masks, there have been reports on social media of people shunning Chinese people in subways, in public transportation, kids teasing Asian-looking kids about their face mask or not wanting to play with them or wanting to test them for coronavirus. So I think that this is concerning. The CDC is doing a great job of messaging with almost every press conference. We do not want to treat people from certain countries or even people with certain travel histories different from other people. We have to work as a nation to not stigmatize these populations. That said, you know, people who look Asian are reporting that they're experiencing everything from like weird looks to outright rejection.
Oh, God. Oh, hold on. Yes. I'm sorry, Ken. Go on.
They aren't necessarily coming from somewhere else.
They're born here.
They could have been born here. There could be two generations living in California,
well,
right?
Exactly. So, Anna Marie, before I let you guys go, right now, how are they treating people who have gotten the coronavirus. What is the treatment for them? I know that this is a virus. Therefore, you can't necessarily give them a drug. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work with viruses. So what? How are people being treated? I know they've been building hospitals at the rate of like one hospital every 6 days in China, which is unbelievable. But at the same time, I'm just trying to figure out what is being recommended in order to get people from illness to health.
So a lot of people are experiencing very mild illness, and the treatment is fairly minor. Several of the people in the United States who've gotten ill have been hospitalized or are in their homes and sort of isolated, but they aren't actually experiencing very strong symptoms. Other people, there's a lot of drug development going on. I mean, as we were talking about earlier, this is moving very quickly, and so the treatments are sort of being tested as we go. There's been some success with some antiviral treatments that have been given out. Okay. There's testing of some new antivirals that hadn't yet been approved by the FDA that they're trying to give to some patients to see if they work. So there's a lot to learn there, but it's generally being treated like other viruses, as you said.
So as we're going forward on this and we're beginning to sort of understand it, I know that China has been somewhat reluctant always to sort of share information and share news. Have they allowed the CDC, have they allowed the American sort of health community into China in order to assist them? It's not that we have an incredible special level of expertise, but to some extent we actually do. And I think in a bizarre way, sometimes things like global warming, sometimes things like epidemics or pandemics, while they're negative, they're also potentially a positive because it can actually bring us together to figure out how do we save each other. So how have the Chinese been, Anna A., in allowing the U.S. Scientists and health community to assist them in order to not only help them in China, but to also bring back that knowledge here?
Well, I actually think that I read this morning that China is allowing U.S. health experts to come in. I'm not sure if that's happened yet or whether China has just announced that it's happening. But yes, this is a story that's in Reuters this morning.
Well, and the other thing is, Anna Maria, is that I also read that Facebook and a number of other places are beginning to clearly monitor the misinformation and the fear that's being spread on Facebook. And they're trying to basically eliminate that so that the sort of the bad news that turns out to be inaccurate is not being shared with everyone. And if you could recommend, Anna Marie, a place or a site, is it Kaiser Health News that we go to? Is there a place where you can get accurate information in a timely fashion about what is happening both in China as well in the United States, what to look for, what's real and what's Memorex here? Because if nothing else, I mentioned before that the term trust is something in short supply. And when now you're dealing with something like this, I want to make sure that I don't pass on bad information. I want to make sure that whatever I share is accurate.
You're right that there is a ton of disinformation around this outbreak, as there always are. And social media is a very tricky place to try and get reputable information. I certainly think Kaiser Health News is a reputable source. There are lots of other publications as well with great reporters. Stat News has been doing a great job of staying on top of the day-to-day. The WHO also releases daily situation reports that can give you accurate numbers and information about the population most affected. There's lots of good stuff there, and they're quite readable even for a general audience. So I think the CDC also is filled with information both on how to protect yourself and also what is known and what the risks are in the United States right now.
So the reason I say this is that I want to end with kind of the idea of the bad information that gets shared, and I think I may have shared some of this with you, but this was from my daughter from the other day. Edwin and his parents and I are fine. And then she goes on to say, I'm grateful for all I'm learning at this time. I just pray that the people in Wuhan are okay. Now, this is to tell you how crazy it is in China, which is also being threaded with misinformation. It is the most horrifying for them, I'm sure. Edwin was having bad dreams last night because some people are dying in Wuhan, possibly not being reported, and because everyone everyone is so afraid that they're leaving the bodies in the street. Listen to this. I'm not sure how true this is, but Edwin is very sad and scared. He's also upset because there's a huge rumor going around that America did this. He's worried about my safety. They're saying that the American government did this to hurt China. There are just so many unknowns. Listen to this, everyone. There's so many unknowns swimming around us at the moment that it's what makes this so challenging. So as we were talking about what's happening to Chinese folks here and that people are being, you know, harassed now, understand the opposite is happening in China because now this is part of the rumor mill and now are Americans vulnerable. That's where information is so important and we need to find places we can trust. Thank you so much, Anna 1 and Anna 2, for joining us from Kaiser Health News. I have a feeling we'll be calling you back. I really value your knowledge and your calmness.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.